And hello, everybody. Welcome to a special Saturday night main event review of Post Wrestling's
live from
Toronto.
Yes, StreamYard.
Here we are, everybody.
It's Saturday night.
There he is. Wei Ting himself joining us, and we have Saturday night's main event to discuss. We're coming on about an hour after the show went down. Wei and I both had plans tonight, so we were delayed tonight. But here we are, squeezing in Saturday night's main event, and we're going to chat about the show, which I will say was a pretty tight two-hour broadcast from WWE.
So we saw the five-match card, which is not different from their PLEs, which take up 3 hours. So
it's amazing how much you can get through when you cut out all those video packages. All, like, there were no non-wrestling segments on this show.
Just the part at the beginning, sure.
You know? Yeah.
Like, you still had video packages previewing the matches. I wouldn't say it felt all that different from a PLE, but for some reason it was far tighter, and they fit what they needed to do. They didn't cut any of the matches short. They gave you like what felt like a very substantial five-match card with the fanfare attached to, you know, this Saturday night's main event nostalgia show, but in a very tight 2 hours.
I think they gave them like heavy, like, television lengths. Like, when we look at this, like, your main event went 12 minutes. Like, these were not your, like, a big Cody Owens match on a PLE. It's going a lot more than 12. But I would imagine this was an interesting one to watch, because as a whole, as I'm looking at this, I didn't think there were any matches that I would designate as, like, killer matches to go see. But this was all about the production and presentation of WWE, coupled with nostalgia. And I think this is going to be one of those shows that you're coming out of it, and are you raving about one specific match? Probably not, but I imagine a lot of people coming out of this show just that it was a fun 2 hours, and WWE playing with history and a lot of just feel good nostalgic elements that almost made this a show that was impossible to fail from that vantage point.
Yeah. I think that's probably taking the perspective of what this show means to, you know, for instance, the fan who watches every single week. More importantly, this was then on a new night, on a different network, in front of a new audience, potentially. And for that purpose, I mean, I thought this was even more important as almost a sampler for what modern day WWE is for somebody who might not be watching.
And you kind of got that with Michael Cole. Like, there were elements, like, I would never say it was like kind of like introductory stuff, but there were elements like explaining.
I would like the way that he called, like, there was noticeable effort from Cole to catch new audiences up on, like, you know, people's backstories, like the Zayn match, for instance, telling us, like, this is Sami Zayn, you know, who's the guy who beat Gunther, like, just kind of bullet point things, and basically, like, catching us up on why are they chanting, calling him Sami Uso? Well, because, you know, such and such. So you're going to get that on the Netflix show times 10, you know, like, the whole month, I think, is going to be about making a strong first impression.
Well, we're going to dive into this show, and they were at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, New York, and this might be a first. The WrestleTix number, 15,002 tickets distributed. Michael Cole's announcement on television, 14,186. It was WWE that had the lower ticket count on the broadcast than WrestleTix by like 900.
Both sound equally impressive. I mean, if they went up to, what, 17,000, if they wanted to inflate those numbers, it doesn't sound any that more impressive. So, I mean, WrestleTix are estimates. I don't know how WWE calculates theirs, but whatever. Like,
yeah, this was also like the stripped down set, tons of like retro.
Well, we got to talk about the opening. I mean, that's almost as interesting as any of the wrestling on the show. So we get like a new opening video with like an old TV set. Starts with the intro from the original. Lots of clips from the old Saturday night's main event. Lots of Jesse, as you would expect from back then. Clips of Taker, Piper. Very surprisingly, no Hogan in these clips.
No Hogan and no Vince.
No, well, yeah, Vince.
Even when Joe Tessitore was mentioning with Jesse Ventura that It's like you being here with Mean Gene here, which, I mean, when you think of Saturday Night's Main Event, you're not thinking of Jesse and Gene as the combo. Maybe a old school Toronto Morning Show fans would remember Jesse and Gene, but not Ventura and Oakerland.
Jesse and Gene, I don't get that.
You don't
reference.
Remember Jesse and Gene?
Hmm.
Okay, popular morning duo in the 90s. But
no Hogan I found interesting because he's all over the promotion for the next one. It could just be that they're saving him, you know, as a surprise.
Well, I mean, we should say, like, his name was brought up on the broadcast by Michael Cole. So it was not as though he was just shunned from this broadcast either. And yeah, if you have seen the promo for San Antonio, like, it's all Hulk Hogan doing an original voiceover for that show. And I mean, all expectations would be he's going to be plastered across the January 25th show.
Then we cut to Obsession, but over top of footage from today's stars over, I think, what was a bit of an attempt at, like, somewhat cheesy, you know, graphics. And I enjoyed all of it. You know, I thought it was all, like, well done. We cut to the old school entrance with the, you know, no big ramp, but, like, rainbow colored neon lights, I should say, with the tunnel with that old school WWE logo. I mean, minimalistic, and I think, like, true to the original without overdoing it.
They used the red, white, and blue ropes. We even had, like, not ringside, they had the LED boards, but on the aisle, like, they had metal barricades as well. You had the old school referee uniforms on top of it. So that they took elements of the old school Raws, applying them here. And, you know, for all the nostalgia that comes with Obsession, I didn't see too much clamoring for Boom by POD, which they used for the last iteration of Saturday Night's Main Event.
I think the fact that that even existed tells you how off the mark they were the last time they tried to do one of these. You know, like, to just essentially take the Saturday Night's Main Event name and just to use that, but give you what feels like really no different from your typical Raw or, like, over-polished, you know, SmackDown, completely defeats the purpose of keeping the name in the first place. You want to make it look like you're stepping into a time warp, at least for one evening.
So the way this was set up is that Joe Tessitore is kind of the host of the show on the stage at a podium and welcomes in Jesse Ventura, who a lot of this was built around. He shows up in the boa, and Joe Tessitore notes that it's been 40 years, or sorry, it's Ventura who notes it's been 40 years since the body has been in the WWE. It has not been quite that long, but he is.
Does he mean that's when he started?
Well, he didn't start in 1984 either, but nevertheless, I mean, he was. I'm imagining that is kind of his approximate. What he was trying to convey here. But it was very instant as well that this was Jesse Ventura, that they wanted him to lean in on the heel shtick, which was pretty, like, tongue-in-cheek, as though this was the version of Jesse that people wanted, and really amping it up, healing himself with Cody, and doing just kind of this introduction.
Yeah.
Like playing the hits of Jesse Ventura.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, if it was just Jesse coming in and, I don't know, being a former politician, I mean, what's the point of having Jesse on? You want to see Jesse perform, you know, by having him come in here, put on the boa and play essentially his old character. And I thought he did a great job. Like, he felt very, well, increasingly comfortable as the night went on. But I thought, even, like, from the get-go, felt like he was having fun doing it. Threw a dig at Dusty early on, and obviously kind of set up his role in the main event.
What did you think just overall, like, the usage of Jesse for these? He did two segments with Joe Tessitore and then calling the main event with Michael Cole and Pat McAfee.
Excellent. Like, certainly no criticisms whatsoever. I wouldn't have enjoyed him, I think, by having him on every match. For one thing, I don't think he's caught up enough on the storylines. And we know he's not really caught up on storylines because we'll kind of get to, you know, some of the audio, extra audio we got to hear on the UK feed. But, you know, I don't think he's kept up enough on wrestling to talk about, like, Meechin and Chelsea Green, for instance.
I think he would have been he really would have stuck out if he had been on this entire
It also
broadcast.
Takes away the specialness of having him, you know, by overexposing him. But I thought it was also important to show him on screen early on just to kind of, you know, like, he's a celebrity. Joe Tessitore is, I think, you know, the type of person that they hired to attract a non-wrestling fan. Same with Pat McAfee. So like off the top here from the show, you have a 1-2-3 hit of like mainstream names that might be attractive to a typical non-wrestling fan checking out on NBC for the first time.
So Matt McAfee is introduced. So he is calling the show with Michael Cole, and then they're promoting that they will be the team on Netflix when Raw moves over January the 6th. And Michael Cole live from New York, it's Saturday night's main event as we go into Drew McIntyre and Sami Zayn, which is the first match of the evening. And in fact, we did get a full match, and you have to say, like, outside, I guess, of the main event, like, this was a night of, like, pretty much clean finishes, like, with, like, the controversy at the end of the title match, but this was a perfect example of that. I mean, this was, we'll go through the match here, but this was putting Drew McIntyre over solid over Sami Zayn. Like there was no foul play, there was no like out here for a Sami Zayn, like just bringing back Drew and making him a strong dominant heel. The crowd was very lively for Sami with Sami Uso chants. Cole is promoting how they are going to change the world on January the 6th and plugging the tribal combat match. Made you know, perfect sense for them to get that match announced last night, so they had a match to promote for everybody tonight. Drew misses in the corner with his shoulder, and the Huluva kick gets stopped by a boot, and Drew hits a sit-out powerbomb, tries for a white noise off the buckle, but Sami counters that with a sunset bomb, and then the Claymore is cut off as Sami manages the blue thunderbomb, big near fall, and as he calls for the Huluva, Drew rolls out of the ring, Zayn goes after him, and as Zayn chases him back into the ring, is caught with the Claymore and pinned in 10 minutes and 5 seconds. Just a pretty dominant win for Drew McIntyre that certainly suggests that he is going to be, like, you still have the outstanding issue with Jey Uso, I guess, as kind of maybe next, but the thought of this being some big lengthy program, like certainly Zayn can, you know, vow revenge and come back from this, you can tell that story, but this was much more conclusive than I expected that this was going to be. I thought this was sort of going to be an entree for a rematch to come, or even, you know, an attack on Sami Zayn, that this would be you wouldn't get a finish delivered, but they did.
Yeah, in our preview, we suspected that one of the five matches might have been cut short just due to time, but clearly they had enough time for a substantial match with everyone. And at the very least, I would have expected just a major heat angle with McIntyre taking Sami out, just to kind of, you know, like give us a bigger reason to cheer on Jay as he gets revenge. They didn't really even do that. I mean, that could still be coming, but I thought even this though was like was maybe enough for Jay to want to vow revenge. Like Drew is the bloodline killer right now. He's the bloodline hunter, and he's already taken Jimmy Uso out, I guess more so than, you know, he was already taken out. And I guess beating Sami is as maybe conclusive of like a checklist, you know, done with you type of thing as he could get. So I mean, the end result of all of this is Jay is left. So Jay versus Drew, you imagine coming up.
Yeah. And I mean, I am certainly not the first person to point this out, is the observation that you are starting to cultivate this group of Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, and Kevin Owens that all lived through the bloodline, and now it's you guys are allowing Roman back into power after we were able to unseat this tyrant, and they all have this this motivation and are aligned through this as well, that could be a very long-term story in the new year, that they all have this link between them. Several of the legends were in attendance. We saw Tito Santana, although I think on the UK broadcast that we were watching, I think they came back from break late, and I don't think we did get to see Tito, but he was showing on most people's broadcast.
Yeah, we'll mention now, they had Tito, they had Jimmy Hart, they had Coco Beware as your legends, along with Rich Herring,
yeah,
who was unexpected, but I love the fact that they showed him.
Well, I'm sure that when they were checking off names and they had Tito Santana, Coco Beware, Greg Valentine, Jimmy Hart, you know who'd be a great cameo? Our former Senior Vice President of Government Relations and Risk Management.
Well, I mean, I was surprised that I guess he made it there, but he also is a Warrior Award recipient.
He won the Warrior Award, or was presented with the Warrior Award, and retired last year as well. And somebody that I would imagine with a title like that, many stories. Is what I
and probably has a hopefully healthy bank account. I hope for somebody who's worked there for that long. But they made shirts for the occasion for Coco Beware, Tito Santana, and Jimmy Hart, just for and they're selling that on, of course, WWEshop.com
of course,
right now.
Of course, we're not.
Where's the Rich Herring
ticket?
Where's the Rich Herring T-shirt?
Oh my God. Senior Vice President of Government Relations and Risk Management shirt. Mm-hmm. I think that would be something else. Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure Card from 2004 featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024 with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. Liv Morgan and Io Sky was next for the Women's Championship, and they mentioned the first Saturday night's main event taking place in this building in May of 1985, featuring Wendi Richter and Fabulous Moolah. Sky hits an acai moonsault as they go to the commercial break, and then she missed with the bullet train attack, the double knees in the corner, allowing Liv to hit a backstabber and follow-up codebreaker. But Sky gains hold of Liv, hitting three consecutive rolling, bridging Germans, which were very impressive looking. The crowd is chanting for Io, and then Sky slips on the springboard, and Liv just immediately tries to hit the code breaker, and they just play off this misstep. And I thought this was one of those a misstep that they just rolled with. Mm-hmm. And they just were not fazed at all. They didn't have that oh shit pause moment. They just went right through it, and it was like they just rolled with the punches.
I thought it actually became the highlight of the match, the most memorable part of the match.
I thought they both handled it like great here, and it was like a seamless transition back to the match. And as Sky manages to hit the bullet train attack, the over the moonsault lands on Liv's boots as she gets them up, and just instantly she is in position for oblivion. And again, a very clean win for Liv Morgan in 9 minutes and 5 seconds. Liv, we should also mention, she came up with a bloody nose, and they did replay this knee shot from Io that I'm pretty sure was the culprit. They were on the broadcast suggesting she may have a broken nose. Maybe not. It looked to just be like a bloody nose, but when they showed this replay, I was like, okay, viable injury if that is the case.
Well, it added to the visual of this, like almost like demonic, villain, looking pissed off and grabbing her championship. So I thought it worked out really well. I think for Io, I don't know if it's like a significant part of her repertoire, certainly like not to the point where it has a signature name or anything, but she could use that now. That knee could be a signature move coming off of this. So one of those sort of fortunate incidents. I thought it was like a good above average match from the two. Lots of good offense from Io. Morgan looked very good as well. Not really a match that took things to a huge next level, gear like most of the matches on the show. But again, we have to remember these are feuds that aren't A programs for almost everybody on the card, right? Like
these first two matches, like you felt like they're building these heels for bigger matches, and the Liv one is the obvious one that they use to set up next.
Yeah, these are again like essentially chapters to get us to the actual main events, and I think that's what a Saturday night's main event should be. They should give away your SummerSlam or WrestleMania level match. It should just be the thing that gets you there to that next point. Again, standout moment of the match was how Morgan especially handled the slip from Io, not skipping a beat, and it seemed to give off like real instincts of a veteran, and I think that sort of thing is going to reflect really well on her to the people that matter in the back.
And Liv is leaving with Raquel and Dominic when Rhea Ripley comes out and they have a face off, and Liv just holds up the belt. So obviously that is coming sooner than later. And you would look at January 6th as another potential date for that match to take place.
Yeah, she doesn't really come out for any purpose. Like she just, it's the end of the match.
She's in the neighborhood.
I'm going to come out, do my pose, and that's kind of it. But it's like, it's whatever. It's like one of those comic book, cartoon things. That's fine. The purpose of this. It's to preview and tell everybody, hey, here's the match that actually matters that you're going to have to probably pay for.
Could you imagine if the the shoe is on the other foot, and Liv is going to need the face mask now after Rhea just got rid of hers.
Oh, I love it. I love that. I think that's a great idea.
Then it was Gunther, Damian Priest, and Finn Balor for the World Heavyweight Championship. Finn Balor's entrance, he comes out with JD, and he's got a bag over his head that reads Balor over top of it. You think they're going to be selling these? After all the controversy with the recent Bryan Danielson bag over his head angle, I don't know if they're going to be selling these to children. But
the Balor bag, I'm not
Balor
so sure.
Bag, yeah. No.
How about a shirt that says...
Kip Sabian tried to get this over, but Balor's going to try and take it to the next level.
How about a shirt that says FXX? X, would you get that for your child for this Christmas?
No, I would not. This would look like, I don't know, this guy is like, he's kind of like, you know, half wrestler, half like bondage performer. That's kind of the Finn Balor.
It's kind of all of Judgment
presentation.
Day.
Yeah, it is. Anyway. Early on, Damian Priest nearly killed himself executing this Tope Con Hero and came up somewhat short on Gunther. And anyway, landed the move. Gunther goes down. We go to the break. They're emphasizing how Gunther's only losses over the past 3 years are to Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes. There are chop exchanges by Priest and Gunther. Some good three-way spots here. I thought that they gelled pretty well here. You had Priest doing the old school for the first time and ending it with a crossbody. And then lifts up Balor for the razor's edge. He is stopped by Gunther. And Gunther applies the sleeper on Priest while Balor is on the floor. So Priest fights to his feet, breaks free, hits the South of Heaven. But Balor returns and breaks it up, lands the shotgun, goes for the coup de grace, and Gunther knocks him off balance. And after a razor's edge is hit to Gunther, it's followed by the coup de grace. Priest makes the save, kind of, because it's like he touches Balor. And Balor does not come off of him. The shoulders don't move. It's like, this is a full-on cover. But it's like, hey, it's like tag. If I hit you, the cover is broken up. And that was, this was not a great visual save. Unless that's Finn Balor's out. He can state, I won the championship and I was robbed.
At this point, they should almost maybe even just make it a rule, okay? Like, you don't have to knock a person off to break
just
the fall.
Just flick their ear.
Yeah, you just have to, like, touch them. Touch them with their pinky.
So the razor's edge to Balor gets countered. South of Heaven is hit, and then Gunther grabs Priest by the hair, puts him out on the floor with the sleeper, and then power bombs him on the steps. And boy, he had to struggle to get Priest up, but landed on the steps. And then in he goes, shotgun power bomb pins Balor with a stack in 11 minutes and 5 seconds. So this was kind of the outline of the match that I kind of envisioned it going. And I thought the match was good. Like, I think you could make the argument like this was maybe the best match on the show, like this or your main event, depending on, you know, what your preference was. But I thought it was like a fine three-way. It didn't blow me away, but like, I had no complaints about this. Crowd was into it, and Gunther got the big win on Balor. If anything, I just thought they would maybe put a little more intensity on Balor and Priest, like heating up that issue to come out of this. There was not as much of that conflict between the two, and it's Gunther getting another. This was like another like big clean win on the show, which was kind of the theme right up until the main event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like Gunther maybe still coming off of the Crown Jewel loss is still in a phase where he needs to rack up these big wins for himself again en route to whatever big, you know, event he's got coming up at a pay-per-view, for instance. Assuming Priest didn't figure into the plans early on when they had made this Balor versus Gunther only, you can see the result of this match and completely understand why Damian Priest was a necessity to add in here. For one thing, he's not only he's the only babyface in the match. He's also a local area guy being built from New York City here. The entire match was built around him, and it worked. You know, the crowd was with him for every step, and I thought overall Priest did really well as the lead and really was the key to the match's success. So, will they go to Balor versus Priest after this? I mean, do you feel the attraction to it? You know, they'll have to probably reheat it up some other way.
I think you've got to do the match, like whether it's on like TV would be a fine place to do it on. You don't really have too many other options coming up, but I do think you have to do the match, maybe with some kind of blow off stipulation attached to it.
Feels like a TV level event. Yeah.
Well, after you buy your Rich Herring and Coco Beware t-shirts, I hope they were selling this Kevin Owens Canadian Dream shirt where he had imposed his face onto Dusty's body. And this is a great shirt. He also, they showed him arriving with a Gold Dust shirt. So, I mean, this guy got the most mileage out of a wardrobe for this program with Cody.
Oh, he's got a brand new t-shirt collection coming off of this. Yeah. This one, I'm pretty sure they are. Well, I didn't see on the shop, but it did have a Saturday Night's Main Event logo on the back of it.
Yes.
Which tells me it's probably an official product you could pay money for.
Yes, yeah. I would think so. They're not making that mistake.
Oh, so he's also got the red armband, of course.
Yes.
The red elbow pad.
That's right. Tessa Torre and Jesse Ventura do a reset on stage, and Ventura loves Liv Morgan. And I mean, this portion, like, you could see, like, he seemed very reliant on notes and, you know, talking about just
he called him Dominique.
And we also had I gave it a pass in the first one where he called him Kevin Owen, but then he called him Kevin Owen a second time in the main event. That someone should have clued him in there. Listen, I think with Jesse, and I think we will hear this in time, at his core he has very good instincts that he can just cold observe things. And I thought he shined by the post-match with Owens and Cody. I thought that was his finest three minutes of the whole broadcast was the injustice to Kevin Owens. Like, that is where he shined. And I think he will be perfectly suitable in this role as long as they don't overexpose him. And this would be kind of the limit I would want of Jesse on these 2-hour broadcasts.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about when they return in January, what they'll change up from this first episode. And I wonder if these Jesse Tessitore segments are going to be, like, really necessary after you've already done the introduction. I don't really think they are. I don't think they add a whole lot beyond just telling the audience, hey, Jesse the Body Ventura is here. We know that he's there now. I don't really think you need to outside of maybe that first on camera to introduce everybody to the show. Like, to get Jesse's opinion on Liv Morgan versus Meechan, Chelsea Green versus Meechan, I don't really care for it. And you're only, like, taking a bigger risk by having him, like, screw up names on TV.
I mean, you could do an interview segment with Jesse where he interviews somebody. Like, you could do that, and perhaps he's designated to call the main events on these shows. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, like, I think
great.
He was
loved him.
You know, yeah, he was. You know, was he sharp on every story? No, but I think
neither was like a Pat McAfee. You know, like, well, maybe McAfee. Neither was a Booker T. Okay, like, let's be honest. Like, Booker's first, like, you know, matches, calling first his first matches back wasn't.
We'll get into it later, but let's also appreciate the quarterback that is Michael Cole you know, just steers the ship regardless of how out of the loop some of his color commentators may be. So we go to Chelsea Green, who comes out with Piper Niven, taking on Meechan to determine the first women's U.S. champion. And Chelsea Green is wearing an outfit adorned by images of herself, hanging off her hat, plastered over all of her gear. And as soon as the match begins, it is noted on NBC, these are two former Knockouts champions in TNA.
Oh, the entire backstory of this match suddenly became their history in TNA. Yes. Yeah. So Cole noting that 7 years ago today, Chelsea won her first TV title. Sorry, her first title, which Cole did call a TV title. I think he meant she won her first title on TV. It was the Knockouts title against Rosemary.
Yeah, so I do remember this. This is when TNA was, like, bulk taping everything. So it was like she had actually won the title like a month before, but it did legit air on December 14th. So, yeah that was the mention of Laurel Van Ness, which Michael Cole did not make mention of her other alias.
He also mentioned that Chelsea's first televised match was against Meechan, who was known as Jade at the time.
That is right. Yes. Yeah. So
TNA getting a lot of love on NBC tonight.
Hey, yeah. They're like, you know, TNA, big things. They've just brought back Tessa Blanchard.
I don't think they went there, no.
Piper Niven takes Meechan to the floor and hits a side slam behind the referee's back. We come back, and Green tries for the Rough Rider. It's stopped with a power bomb, and Meechan hits a pair of released Germans into a tornado DDT, and then we get the Eat the Feet and Unprettier blocked. The Rough Rider connects, and Cole mentions that they are on Long Island, so you may as well hit the Rough Rider. So
and
Green,
you can catch him on Ring of Honor's final bell coming up.
Yeah, about an hour away from here.
Yeah.
Green hits a suicide dive, but misses the target. I hate when this happens, and she hit her partner by mistake. And then Meechan and Green get hit with a somersault dive off the apron, and they went so quick into the ring, and we just got this awful looking Eat the Feet that Michael Cole, she didn't get quite all of that one. And the crowd, though, are all chanting for Chelsea as she kicks out of the Phantom Eat the Feet, and they're all cheering for her. Pat McAfee notes the crowd is getting behind Green, and Meechan sends Niven off of the apron with a drop kick, and off the turnbuckle, Green flips over into position for the Unprettier, hitting it, a very nice setup for it, and hits it, and huge pop for the win. 8 minutes and 5 seconds, so Chelsea is presented with the title by Nick Aldis, and the pyro goes off on the anniversary of her first television pro title win airing on a 1 month tape delay.
Wow. Amazing. You know, conquering the US for Canada. Okay. Maybe fighting back against cries for us to be the 51st.
Maybe there's going to be a tariff placed on this on Chelsea's, contract.
Be careful getting into that political discussion on this wrestling podcast, John.
Oh, yeah. Right? Jesus. Yeah, don't make me so angry.
The match I thought was, I had said on the preview that I was expecting like a pretty average match from the two, just kind of given what we've seen. To be honest, I thought this was even a little bit below that, and I think partially handicapped by the length that it was given. Secondly, I didn't think Meechan had the best match here. You know, I've seen Meechan have like very good performances lately, but this one, unfortunately with the Eat the Feet, I thought the Tarantula looked a little bit weird, you know, on the bottom rope earlier, but crowds were very forgiving, and it never really derailed the reaction to the win, which the crowd reacted really big for, you know, including that really nice looking Unprettier. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue either way. The fact is, like, whether you are a fan of Meechan or whatever, like, she has not been this pushed commodity on television. And yes, you have the dumpster match that, okay, like, there's a history here. There's also been, like, Chelsea Green and Piper Niven that have kind of been, like, egging on, like, Nia and Stratton, that I really do feel that Tiffany Stratton in this role of going for the title, and it's this story of, okay, she wins and then Nia's got that headache taken care of. I just think that I thought that would have been even a stronger dynamic in this. The fact is, like, Chelsea Green and Meechan are, you know, Green is a very, I think, enjoyable character, but we will now see, like, in this position, if this is a title that people take seriously. But I mean, they did get the crowd going for her, and this was treated like a babyface win at the end, even if she's in, this was technically our fourth heel win in a row.
Yeah, and I assume that's just because the crowd likes Chelsea. You know, they've liked Chelsea, I think, for a long, long time now, and I think are more than open to her turning babyface, whether or not they explore that. I didn't get any hints of that from watching any of the content recently, but they could do that at some point, and I'm sure it'll the audience will already take to it. I do have still have my doubts about establishing this title on a comedy wrestler who doesn't have that much credibility, but they're starting to give her a little bit of legitimacy, like, you know, letting her do like Tope Suicidas. That Unprettier at the end was a very athletic counter, and I hope she's able to do a lot more of that, even if
they
she
had
has
her beat
cheat.
Bailey and Meechan like clean, like, as well, like,
with Piper distraction, but like, that's for a heel pretty clean. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt that they really like, there was very little like outside interference on this whole show. Like, I thought Judgment Day, you would have between the two matches that you had Balor and Liv involved in, like, they really toned this down to just be kind of like a straightforward show where for the most part you were going to get clean finishes. Then Jesse Ventura is brought to the broadcast booth for the main event and takes credit for paving the way for Michael Cole and Pat McAfee to make all this money. Then we got the Pat Estrader. Great idea and concept, I guess. And Jesse then, he wanted to go rogue and do some stand-up and talked about how he took Jake Roberts' snake, Damien, and made a jacket out of him. And Cole and McAfee did not know how to react to this, but Pat seemed impressed that he skinned a snake and is wearing Damien.
It was unfortunate because, like, I don't know if, like, Cole was just up for time where he didn't really digest the words, but, like, you could tell Jesse at the first mention of Damien was expecting some sort of, like, reaction, and neither of the two gave it to him. So, like, Jesse had to reiterate, Damien, Jake the Snake's snake, I used the snake to make this jacket. Like, he had to really kind of beat it.
I'm sure in Jesse's wrestling brain, this is a super topical reference.
Yeah. Well, we got it, at least nerds like us. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So outcome, Kevin Owens first and followed by Cody, who... opens up his jacket and reveals the Eagle Championship.
Just an eagle? Like, what's attached to the eagle? How am I supposed to know?
Well, as much as I was surprised that we did get the TNA reference on NBC, the more stunning surprise reference was Reggie Parks, who designed the original Winged Eagle Championship with the belt retired in 1998. And what did he call it? It was replaced by the Big Eagle Championship.
Big Eagle. I guess these are like unofficial like names that they've given these championships or that the fandom has.
So. You know, one day when, you know, Saturday night's main event is revived and airing on, like, I don't know, a microchip somewhere, are they going to call back to their new babyface coming out with a spinner belt that's going to be, oh my God, the spinner belt?
Yes.
When belts were cool.
Well, listen, if Cena ever is going to win it in the next year, you know it's coming back. You know, that's sort of a signature. At least, like, people are feel nostalgic about it when it's related to him. They're actually selling a CM Punk version of the spinner belt right now.
Dude, they're going to sell every version of this. This Wing Championship, I'm sure, is on shop already for $1,000.
I kind of want one myself now. And, I mean, listen, like, I'm the last person to like, you know, drop that sort of money on this sort of thing. But, man, seeing this title active again, or at least, like, you know, on your modern champion on television, it brings up the feels, man. This was really cool to see.
Would you go to buy your groceries wearing it?
Yes.
Or would it just be a display?
I'd go exactly like Cody is dressed, in a robe without a shirt, and wearing this championship. Yeah.
So again, Ventura calls Cody a knucklehead for getting hurt in his match with Chad Gable. And this is dangerous against Kevin Owen.
That's fine. It's okay. Like, they did good coaching for him. It's clearly they told Jesse,
listen,
hey,
I was really
there,
glad.
Talk about the ankle injury and just, you know, like, be yourself. And that, yeah.
So early on, Owens just bails to the floor and Cody goes after him, hits a suicide dive, and in doing so, hurts his ankle. And that's kind of the story of this injury lingering for Cody throughout the match. And after landing, Owens drops him on the desk, looks into the camera, hi, Randy, and we go to picture in picture. And this was our first picture in picture break of the night, as opposed to just a hard break. And so I've got the sound on. I'm still watching the match. And then we got to hear Michael Cole, producer / play-by-play announcer. Now, listen closely, because there is an ad playing here, but I think you'll be able to make this out.
I'm going to mention... With Tara. The aggressiveness of Owens.
When she misses home.
If you could bring forward the last, when he met Cody back in Berlin in September, so much was made over the fact that Kevin wouldn't pull the trigger on Cody. That seemingly has changed tonight.
Home away from
home. You can say it early, too, if you want, because of the aggressiveness he's showing here.
You are so that way today. Yes.
Open your eyes, Peter.
So that was the big, Jesse, one of the big stories the first time around when they met in Berlin when they were friends. Kevin wouldn't pull the trigger on the injury that Cody had suffered. So tonight, obviously, he's much more aggressive, and it looks like... Because you're working.
So that was, if you could make it out, of Michael Cole calling back to Bash in Berlin, where Kevin Owens did not pull the trigger, and he's showing a lot more aggression here. Now, I don't know if Jesse's mic was live, if he was nodding. We never heard Jesse like, yeah, okay, I've got this, because then here is that discussion in action.
One thing we've noticed throughout this matchup is the aggressiveness tonight, Pat, of Kevin Owens.
Certainly, the last time they faced each other, Kevin Owens wouldn't pull the trigger at the end.
Whoa, swan time!
So I don't know if Jesse was you guys got this one.
Well, I mean, I think it was more so Cole telling Pat, filling him in, and then just
he was addressing Jesse, though.
after he already gave the notes to Pat. You can hear Pat saying, "Oh yeah." So I mean, it's just doing what a producer does, you know, just kind of keeping his team up to date on what we're about to talk about. I don't think Jesse had to really play a role there other than just to maybe be kept up on the storyline for the rest of it. So
it does give you an insight, though, into like Michael Cole here and two people that I would argue are probably not, you know,
Who the fuck has time to keep up with this shit like we do? Okay,
unless the people who are the people who are hired to be calling this should be. Yes,
I mean
those are people that should absolutely be up on storylines. If you're calling a national broadcast, yes,
yeah. But again, like, be realistic, okay? Like I just don't imagine Jesse the Body Ventura to be watching Raw every single Monday for 3 hours. That's not really what the job is. That's not what they expect of him. He's here to call one match. And they have to. All they have to do is just keep him up to date enough for this one match, and kind of the same with McAfee. And it's not like McAfee doesn't know; he knows. He just needed to be refreshed, and which he said, oh, you know, he appreciated. But yeah, just like, you know, just a nerdy thing that, like, you know, we love to see because we see so little of it.
We come back and Owens executes a swanton. Cody continues to sell the ankle, and then Owens tries the bionic elbow. He's stopped, so Cody hits it. And this is where Jesse Ventura notes, because they ask him if that reminds him of anything, and Jesse informs them, "I never wrestled Dusty," which is true. He never did share a ring with Dusty Rhodes. The Cody cutter is attempted, but Owens goes to the floor. I thought this was a nice little subtle move, whether intentional or not, is that Cody is left hanging, standing on the top, and he's got to hop down onto the mat, onto his ankle, just from Owens like rolling to the floor. So then they fight on the floor, and Owens is clearing the desk, but Cody manages an RKO on top of the desk. They go inside. Cody cutter is hit, only gets a two count. Owens hits a fisherman buster. Cody kicks out. And then we get a stunner and crossroads blocked. Owens shoves him into referee Charles Robinson. So Robinson is dead. We never got Charles Robinson until like the end of this match. So he was unconscious. And then Owens hits the stunner. There is no referee, and he gets the visual fall on Cody Rhodes, which tells me right there is your piece of story for Kevin Owens to cling on to from this match, that he pinned the champion and Charles Robinson was out. So then backup referee Eddie Arango runs in counting two, and then the pop-up powerbomb is avoided. Cody goes for the disaster kick but misses, taking out Eddie Arango. So now both refs are out, and Owens throws Cody into the post and grabs a chair, which Cody manages to duck, hits the Cody cutter, and then a crossroads on top of the chair, slides the chair out. There's no referee, but Charles Robinson, like a zombie, raises from the dead on the floor, and from the floor counts three as Cody wins in 12 minutes. And this is where Jesse was in his groove. The outrage of Kevin Owens being wronged here because Cody got away with using the chair and the referee never saw it. You have ample motivation for Kevin Owens to have coming out of this. But Ventura calls it a tainted win. And as Cody is celebrating, that's how we go off the air. And it's after the broadcast that Kevin Owens returns, laying out Cody with a package pile driver, and they stretchered out Cody. So much like the turn, where that was done in the parking lot and not on the broadcast, this huge injury angle is one where they relied on photos like this and videos of people in the arena to get it out. But this did not actually air on the broadcast, which was a nice little add-on. And I didn't even see this, but you have Kevin Owens with the championship.
He finally gets to hold the winged eagle. So his boyhood dream has come true, at least for this evening.
The Canadian dream has come true.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You know, the fact that, like, I think maybe they wanted to have a happy ending, you know, for the live crowd, or sorry, for the NBC crowd, more importantly. Maybe they just, there was some desire to, like, you know, like, give a very sort of, like, standard happy moment. You know, Cody holds the belt to close NBC, and then to carry on the storyline, we do our heat on afterwards. Perhaps there's something there. Maybe they just thought it was cool.
Here's the question, and this was the thought process too of the, like, when Kevin Owens turned on him, is the same here. Like, here's this maneuver that we have not seen in WWE. And I haven't watched the video. I'm imagining it got a pop when they hit Cody with it.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be the best to avoid that reaction where you're going off the air and the crowd is like cheering this move that we're not supposed to be seeing. Mm-hmm. And it gets a babyface reaction because it comes out of nowhere.
If that was the level of thinking that they were putting into it, then I mean, it's very good thinking, getting ahead of the crowd, you know, to make sure that their product was being protected. Like getting back to the match, I thought they were far more protective of Owens in the match than I was expecting. And it makes sense if they're going to go right back to this program afterwards.
Oh,
right?
It screams rematch, like whether it's last man standing or some kind of stipulation attached to it. They have to come back. This is all built towards a rematch. And God, they've got so much lined up for. Like, you have Randy still in the mix of this whole thing as well. Like,
Randy could be WrestleMania for Owens.
It's possible. Like, at this point, it's possible. You know, Kevin Owens will be obviously figured in pretty prominently for the Toronto show.
I'll just say, if Owens is in any more significant matches for next year, I hope Jesse the Body Ventura calls every single one of them, because Jesse is the type of classic heel commentator that is perfect for the Kevin Owens character. You know, Jesse is the type of classic heel commentator that always takes the perspective of the heel. And Owens is the type of heel that always thinks he's a victim. He only sees things from his perspective.
It's a great pairing.
So having Jesse just like be there logically arguing the match in favor of Kevin Owens and arguing against Cody for being the one to cheat really, really helped Kevin Owens' case, I thought. So he was the perfect addition, I think, to this match.
Yeah, I'll reiterate. I thought like the closing, like the post-match, which was the most important stuff, that's where, to me, Ventura really shined. And getting to see, like, this was the Hogan formula. Like, he skirts away by something that would be totally derided by Gorilla Monsoon if it was the heel doing it. But in this case, it was the babyface outsmarting the heel and using the chair. And Ventura was excellent in that element. And I thought that was the strongest couple of minutes of Ventura on this broadcast.
So what are your thoughts overall?
I mean, I thought this was a very... this was a very fun broadcast to watch. Again, since we're a little bit late, I did get to watch most of Collision, and I haven't even seen the main event yet, which everybody is raving about. Like, the wrestling on Collision, and they had like a pretty good crowd in St. Louis, like vocally.
What was the main event? What was it?
The main event is Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe, and I've just heard that that match was excellent. But even before that, like, the wrestling on that show blew this out of the water. But it was... you know, you watch this and this just had the big event feel to it. It had nostalgia that I thought worked really well. They didn't go so overboard that it felt like it dominated the show. It was nice add-ons.
It wasn't too gimmicky.
Exactly. It was still, these are today's stars. These are the featured acts, as opposed to sometimes those old school Raws where everything was about the past. And this was, these were just sprinkles of nostalgia, and the opening was great. And yeah, I thought this was a very successful relaunch of the franchise, pending obviously how well this does when we get that number on Tuesday. But this, you know, you're riding a real hot swing, and you know, this is not the same level of years past of, you know, to be a success on primetime in broadcast television that this, you know, given the competition tonight, they weren't going up against any massive college football games. Like, they should perform pretty well.
So the company is hot right now, but they're hot for a reason. It's because they've made really smart decisions throughout the course of this particular run. And I thought that continued here with their attempt at revamping this, essentially like a dead concept in Saturday night's main event. I thought it was an incredibly digestible show, you know, at five matches for 2 hours. All five matches felt like they had some level of build to it. And for that reason, I think kept my attention. You know, this actually kind of reminded me of like a classic, like In Your House, you know, that's like just short, like several matches, but all of them having some level of relevance, even if it's not like the A level of relevance. You know, like, this is not a WrestleMania level or even like Survivor Series level match lineup, with the exception of Cody versus Owens, which
that was a pay-per-view level buildup that they had for this. Like, that was a big match. That was not just, you know, it's like a TV program. They built that up very strong.
And that's key, okay? Like, at the very least, you need your main events to feel like they are big enough, you know, for something like this. And I think that's where having like these five match PLEs really help. You can ration your air times so that you still feel like you're giving enough build for these PLEs while simultaneously setting up stories to get to your Netflix debuts or your Saturday night's main events or X amount of significant TV show, right? So I just think like this is just another like example of how well run this machine is at present.
All right. Should we go to some feedback? I'm curious to hear what people thought about tonight's show.
First of all, let's go to some. Let's go to one super chat here. That comes to us from Evan, who sends $20 just to say, "I listened to talk today. Just wanted to say that you guys are fucking awesome. Good day."
Oh man, I'm gonna read this one over and over. Thank you so much, Evan.
I'm gonna frame this one. It. Yeah, I'm going to just, you know, anytime I need a good pick me up, I'm going to look at this. Thank you. Talk, of course, for people who aren't aware, is our Patreon show where John and I just, we don't talk about wrestling. We just kind of talk about ourselves and, you know, what's going on with our business in running this website and our personal lives. And one of our more popular shows over at Post Wrestling Cafe, which is our Patreon.
Yes. Also, while we're mentioning, I do want to throw it out there that we have about 9 more days left of our post-wrestling Christmas jingle contest that is open. You can submit your jingles at forum.postwrestling.com. It is bookmarked at the top of the forum. You can submit them in that thread or send them to john@postwrestling.com. The deadline is a week from Monday. We will play all of the jingles on the show, and then we will crown the winner on our Christmas show, which drops on Christmas Eve. So get your jingles in. It's always a fun contest. And every year we wonder if people are going to show up and submit jingles. And you've never let us down, but there's always that concern.
Also, thank you, Matthew Banson, who just became a member of our YouTube channel. So we do have a Patreon. We always recommend people show up at the Patreon, where it's $6 a month. You do get video, but the video lasts for 30 days. If you strictly prefer the YouTube platform to get our bonus content and you want forever access to the video, then you can sign up over at youtube.com/postwrestling.
All right. Do you want to start us off with?
Sure. Let's go to Anthony, who says, "The lights, the visuals, the color attires, and that classic song Obsession opening off the show as my childhood memories flash before me. With tears in my eyes, I looked up to the sky and said, 'Welcome back, Jeannie Becker. Fashion television is back.'" Yes. Yeah, that's how really most Canadians, I think, would identify with Obsession. Classic. Also, congrats to Chelsea Green for keeping with the grand tradition of having a Canadian become a wrestling company's inaugural U.S. champion. What's that reference?
Well, when WWE rebooted it, was it Benoit that they put the U.S. title on when it was resurrected in 2003? I would have to
I don't remember
go back
at
and
this moment.
Double check, but regardless. Jeremy in Texas. WWE really brought its A-game for the return of Saturday night's main event. I thought this was one of the best shows WWE has had all year. The retro presentation, the in-ring quality, and it all happened in a two-hour show. No surprise, there was no title changes. Glad to see them give Chelsea Green her flowers after a great second half of the year, kick-started by her Money in the Bank performance. It was one night only, but that Winged Eagle title looked fantastic around Cody's waist. I get why they used the logo belt, but the Winged Eagle belt brought back some great memories. Thumbs up show. I'm curious what rating this show will end up doing for NBC, because it was better than anything WWE did previous this millennium for Saturday night's main event. I mean, that's a very big number for them when it comes out on Tuesday, and how well this one performs, and subsequently how effectively they build up this January 25th show, which based on the promo would suggest like that is going to be a big Hulk Hogan themed show.
Let's go up next to Slim Siever, who says, "Tonight was an awesome show. Perfect use of nostalgia with the music, the ring robes, the ref uniforms, and of course, Jesse Ventura. While at the same time, a good use of modern WWE with the lights, pyro, etc. My only complaint about the presentation was not having the show opening promos leading into the Obsession intro." Yeah, was that missing to you?
You know, it's fine. They did them on Collision. So those, maybe if you take Obsession and just play them over the Collision opening, you can have your hope. But yeah, I mean, I expected it because it was just such a natural, but they opted not to go that direction. You did get a pretty cool retro open though, so
yeah, that would have been nice, you know, instead of like the walk-ins that like I guess are at this point a Lee fitting signature, to get something different, like them cutting a promo in front of their logos. That would be so awesome.
The logos might be a little much, but
I'd be into it. And they'd sell way more shirts. He also says, thought the crowd was great. They seemed white hot during the opening match and maintain a good energy level throughout the show. If there was one thing that I think both WWE and AEW can learn from the show was the pacing. It didn't drag like some PLEs with 15 to 20 minute intervals between matches, but it also allowed stuff to breathe instead of match like you get with AEW pay-per-views. Love the show.
Next up is Muggin. The classic aesthetic looked great. I love the added touches of security flanking the talent, and Jesse the Body was in rare form. The amount of ads was pretty disruptive. The whole tone was this space between pay-per-view and TV, and it was a solid outing from an in-ring standpoint. Chelsea Green was super over. The main event did the job, and I saw Kevin Owens hit the package pile driver. Rhea and Liv must end on January the 6th. That would seem logical. Like, they all but told you that match is coming, and that date makes all the sense in the world too.
Man, they're really loading up Netflix, man. So we got Cena, we got Punk Rollins.
I would think that after tonight's angle, we don't see Cody until that show. I mean, I know he's on the live events and stuff for the Christmas shows and stuff, but he should probably be off TV until that January 6th show. But yeah, you got Reigns.
Does he even need to be on January 6th?
I mean, he's promoted for it, and yes, I think it's all hands on deck for that January 6th show. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, let's go up next. Annie, who says, as somebody who doesn't have any nostalgia for Saturday night's main event, I thought the show was a bit of a mixed bag. While I enjoyed the pacing of most of the show, I didn't think Cody versus Kevin Owens got its just due after that build. They didn't have enough time to tell the story surrounding Cody's ankle or make it feel like the build merited. I like the angle Kevin and Cody shot after the show, but I'm uncertain what the follow-up will be. I'm not eager to see a third match between them so soon. Does Cody have to miss a few SmackDowns selling the angle? Yeah,
I think so. I mean, they're... I think it's a double taping of SmackDown. They did the double taping last night. So, I mean, he's probably not even figured into Friday's show. And you can keep him off until... after the holiday for the Netflix launch. But this screamed third match between these two. You have to revisit this. And the last piece of feedback, we go to Brian in New Jersey. A fun show with a fun presentation. My biggest takeaway from it was Chelsea Green. A lot of positivity towards Chelsea Green on the show. Cole was talking up her history. The crowd felt fully behind her, and her title win felt amplified by the crowd support. Great finish, too. The triple threat felt like a bit of a sprint, but I very much enjoyed it. I like that triple threat a lot. I thought it worked for the time that they had. Again, I didn't think that there was any specific match on the show that blew me away, but I think overall the presentation of the 2 hours, I can see a lot of people coming away enjoying this. Like, if you're someone that watches Raw and SmackDown, was this worth 2 extra hours of your time? I think most would say yes, they had a good time watching this. And more importantly, that the next time there's a Saturday night's main event, this will push them towards, I want to see this show. Because it was like a very well paced 2 hour show, and you got some significant stuff on it. This did not feel like 2 hours to fill to meet a network obligation.
It's not to say like great wrestling isn't important, because these days I think that's important to any wrestling fan, but I'll say, at least for the WWE product and the current boom that they're experiencing, it's not the main thing to this audience that they've cultivated.
It means far less.
Stories and characters and just relevant programming. And I would say, like, effective presentation. It matters more to this audience.
Well, there you have it. That was Saturday night's main event. And we followed it with a nice tight paced show here as we sign off. But again, everyone, if you would like to support Post Wrestling, PostWrestlingCafe.com is where you can go. We recently just dropped a review of Knock at the Cabin, starring Dave Bautista, on our latest Rewind Away. And before the end of the year, we will do one more Rewind covering Noah's departure event from the Tokyo Dome in July of 2004, headlined by Jun Akiyama and Kenta Kobashi. So that is coming up. Also, the end of the year, our best and worst of 2024 show with Braden Harrington and Davey Portman of Poison Rana. They will join us. We will be handing out all of our awards. That will be exclusively to PostWrestlingCafe.com members. So check out all of that, and plenty to go until the end of the year, including our annual Christmas show that will be free to all on Christmas Eve. We are sending out our invites, even with a strike that is ongoing here in our neck of the woods, but the invites are out, and we will see who answers the challenge to join us on the annual Christmas show.
Follow us on Blue Sky. Look for at postwrestling.com. Trying to, I mean, I'm pretty much moved exclusively over to Blue Sky right now. So join us there and follow all of our content at postwrestling.com.
Are you trying to be political by stating you're going to Blue Sky?
No.
Get that out of
Everything's political.
Get this out of my discourse. This is going to keep me awake at night. All right. That's it for us. Tomorrow on Sunday morning, Bruce Lord and Kate from Montreal will have a collision review. And then Wei and I are back up Monday night following Raw. Good night.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Minky Couture's holiday season is here. Wrap your loved ones in the gift of luxury with our softest, coziest blankets ever. Perfect for movie nights, chilly mornings, or those magical Christmas Eve moments. From kids to grandparents, there's a Minky for everyone. Shop our exclusive holiday collection now, in-store, or online at minkycouture.com. But hurry, Santa's favorites won't last long. Minky Couture, making your holidays merry, bright, and oh so cozy.